Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
You might remember we spoke recently with Public Radio's Kurt Anderson about his new novel, True Believers, the story of a high-achieving judge in current day looking back on the events that shaped her in the 60s. But since then, friends reading the book have told me it also has one of the most accurate descriptions they've ever read of what it's like to live with type 1 diabetes. Now, to remind ourselves, people with type 1 diabetes can't produce insulin, as opposed to type 2 diabetes, in which, at least in the beginning, insulin is still being produced by the pancreas, but it just isn't being used by the body. People with type 1 need to produce their own insulin. Some wear an automatic pump, but most carry around a little kit, what our next guest calls the whole works, little devices to prick a finger and test the blood and constantly monitor it to make sure the blood sugar isn't too high or too low, and then syringes and bottles of insulin to inject the amount of insulin needed to alter the blood sugar level, again, not too high, not too low. Some of us who live with people with type 1 diabetes know a thing or two about the emotional effects this can have, but we decided to call up Kurt Anderson and ask how he knew so much, and we're going to spend a few minutes with him again today. Kurt, welcome back, and you seem to know quite a lot.
I do know about type 1 diabetes because in my 30s, I was diagnosed with it, with what used to be called juvenile diabetes, but I was practically middle-aged when I was diagnosed. So, yeah, I've lived with it for 20-plus years and had never seen a character dealing with it, you know, significantly in fiction or had the subjective experience of it depicted in fiction.
And you do this now through Karen Hollander, your character. And by the way, when you say type 1 juvenile diabetes, let's remind people, this is the diabetes in which the pancreas, which produces insulin, is completely destroyed. And so people like you with type 1 diabetes have to constantly monitor yourself and inject insulin.
We do. And among other things, I don't know if I can speak for everyone with type 1, but, you know, it wasn't our fault. It's not a result of lifestyle choices or anything else. It's simply some still mysterious combination of genetics and environment that cause your pancreas to go kerflooey at some point.
And you can't change it. There's nothing you can do. The pancreas is shot.
It's gone. So you, as a result, if you manage it well, you test your blood many, many times a day and inject insulin accordingly to try to do what your pancreas isn't.
And by the way, we always hear from people when we use words like fault to distinguish type 1 from type 2, people
sure.
who have type 2 who say, well, wait a second, it's not, you know, fault is a bad word because sometimes they have a complicated medical condition called insulin resistance. You know this, right? But just to have said
I know all that and I understand that and I was being somewhat tongue-in-cheek.
Right.
And there are tens of millions of people with type 2 diabetes, which is the more familiar one that is skyrocketing in incidence, and there are only 1 million or 2 million people in the United States with type 1.
Right. And sometimes the people with type 2 can, through lifestyle changes, reverse theirs. Sometimes they do need to use insulin themselves. But those are some of the distinctions. So here you are. And so you have your character. Go to the first thing that jumped out at me and particularly my friend. This idea that people with diabetes might have mood swings because of the high and low blood sugar. I mean, people know that themselves. If they don't have diabetes, you can get just sort of different moods if you eat a lot of sugar or if you haven't eaten enough. And yet for the diabetic, they're not sure if the mood is because they really feel the mood or if it's because of the diabetes. And further, they're insulted if someone else assumes it's because of the diabetes.
Those are all possibilities. Yeah, it's mostly low blood sugar that causes significant and problematic moods. Often when people are trying to control it too tightly, inevitably sometimes you overdo and you become hypoglycemic. And yes, it is chemically, biochemically, the same thing that some people feel when they've missed a meal or two and get cranky. A friend of mine the other day was talking to me about this. He was unaware of the nature of my constant blood checking and all that, and said, wow, I'm kind of jealous. I said, really, what? He said, I would love to be able to take a drop of my blood anytime I'm feeling angry or upset or confused or beleaguered and thereby have the objective answer of whether it's actual emotion or just some fluke of my blood chemistry. But yeah, that is the issue. And of course, people say, oh, diabetes, it's treatable. It's this chronic disease and it's treatable. And that's all true and that's fine. But it is also, in this sort of hour-to-hour, day-to-day way, a thing that requires, you know, management. And as I depict in this fiction, has these subjective effects that, you know, are invisible to the world.
Well, just a couple things there. You say manage, yeah, you point out, and this is another thing readers noticed, you're playing doctor or mad scientist for the rest of your life, trying to calculate a little more insulin, a little less. Do I need to eat this? Do that? But also, it's one thing to be aware yourself. Oh, you know, I might be getting cranky because I'm low. But then if people around you know you're a diabetic,
yep,
they might try to rob you of real feelings. And has that happened to you where someone says, oh, you come on, you're just getting a little low or something, when you really feel something?
Of course. And there's nothing more annoying than that, or than the people, well-intended people around you who say, oh, are you low? Are you, you know, so I've never thought of it as robbing me of real feelings, but that sort of.
Well, your character does. She's like, wait,
yeah,
a second.
She does.
Yeah, yeah.
She does.
Yeah.
And you know, this sense of being infantilized, you know, and treated as a kid who isn't aware of his or her own emotions or state of wellness.
Right. Well, that's why readers admire you talking about this, because of that fear that someone's just going to assign my feelings to my diabetes. A lot of people don't tell people. Your character does. I mean, makes a point of that. Do you? I mean, you are now.
Well, I am now. No, I never have. I've never been a big, you know, poster person for it or anything. I've never denied it. And like my character, I'm pretty brazen in pulling out the works and shooting up in the middle of restaurants and so forth. So, you know, and I didn't do this in order to, like, achieve sympathy or anything else. I just thought it was an interesting thing for a character in fiction to be, because only in fiction can you really get inside somebody's head and suggest how this feels, how this is, how it is part of, you know, somebody's life. And again, I mean, for your readers who haven't yet read the novel, it's not the central part of the story, but it is, it's not an insignificant part of her character as well.
Well, but there is one point, and again, we don't, this doesn't give anything away in the storyline. It's almost as if, you know, the character has a problem finding shoes or something. It's just like a sort of a secondary track to the real story that you're telling.
Right.
But at one point, the character does relay something, again, very familiar to people with type 1 diabetes, an experience where she had to call 911.
Yeah, well, in that case, actually, as I tell it in the story, her teenage daughter has to call 911 because she's gone into sort of a coma. And especially, I think, if people are not well trained by their doctors when they're diagnosed, or if they're a kid, or for whatever reason, they're not managing it well and carefully, when blood sugars go too low, it can be a really serious situation indeed.
Yeah. When we come back, a little more on those 911 calls. Kurt Anderson has type 1 diabetes, so does a character in his new book, True Believers. She sticks herself with needles, has huge black and blue marks as a result. Some readers say it's the most truthful depiction they've ever seen of living with diabetes. More with Kurt in a minute, here and now. Welcome back. We've been talking about living with type 1 diabetes. Again, type 1, formerly called juvenile onset, is the form of diabetes in which the pancreas, which produces insulin, is destroyed by antibodies. So people with type 1 diabetes constantly test their blood and give themselves insulin, either through injections or an insulin pump, to live, really. Type 1 diabetes has been in the news. Researchers at Mass General Hospital say they've demonstrated that a simple vaccine used to fight tuberculosis also attacks those cells that turn on the pancreas. They say they've actually been able to reverse type 1 diabetes for about a week. Now, other researchers say that might be a bit of magical thinking. We'll link you to an article at hereandnow.org. But it, of course, if at all true, would be a dream come true for people living with type 1 diabetes. We've been talking with Kurt Anderson of Public Radio Studio 360, also author of the novel True Believers, in which, and really a sidebar to the main story, a character, a successful judge, has type 1 diabetes, which means she has to carefully test and juggle her blood sugar levels, the food she's eating, the insulin she gives herself, taking over the job of the pancreas. People with type 1 diabetes can't eat without taking insulin because there won't be anything to process the sugars in the food. In effect, they'd be eating but starving themselves. When Kurt's character's blood sugar gets too high, she injects insulin, which is the key to enabling the cells to take sugar out of the bloodstream and use it for energy. On the other hand, low blood sugar, which can result from not eating or exercising a lot or taking too much insulin, low blood sugar means there's not enough blood sugar in the bloodstream, and that can starve the brain, cause mood swings, but also dizziness, fainting, seizures, and a coma. In Kurt's novel, one night the judge goes into a seizure, her arms flailing. Luckily, her daughter hears a noise and goes into the room and discovers her and calls 911. So, Kurt Anderson, do you have 911 stories?
I've had, a couple, three serious experiences. Not for many years, knock wood. As I say, I've been doing this for more than 20 years. And in the first few years, yeah, it was figuring out what was what and exactly the combination of food and medicine and exercise and all the rest,
sure,
that one needed to do to keep on the straight and narrow.
Well, I'm going to share one. I hope listeners are okay with that. My friend certainly is. He's given me permission. This is my guy who has diabetes, type 1, same as you. And something I've learned is that, I pray I don't ever get it, because I just think you have to be so on top of things, including knowing that there's a long-term insulin that you might take at night, and
right,
then there's shorter term. And at least in his case, the bottles looked exactly the same except for a tiny dot. And so one night he mixed them up. And the next thing I know, the phone rings at about 2:30 in the morning. I'm like, answer your phone. Will you answer your phone? And he can't answer the phone because he's practically in a coma, as you said. And, we call the emergency services, and thank goodness they're able to bring him back with some orange juice. People think you need insulin when you go into this situation. You don't. You need sugar.
It's the opposite. You need sugar of some
right.
sort. Yeah.
And you want to know something? Hours later, we're thinking, wait a minute, who was on the phone? It was a butt call.
Wow.
So, and you know what else? It happened a second time with a butt call at like 2:30 in the morning. And by that, I mean somebody had their phone in their pocket and the phone rang, alerted us to the fact that he was slipping into a coma. It was like a pocket call. So,
that's bizarre.
It is, but it just underscores people who think, you just manage it. No, and I was told by the EMTs, happens all the time. A huge amount of their calls come from diabetics. Some just have gotten their science off.
Well, exactly. And it is this, as you say, this complicated playing doctor thing of these different vials and doing, multiplication of to figure out the sort of algorithm that you're, okay, this is 3 hours ago, I ate 2 hours from now. It's complicated. And I'm lucky I'm good at math. My wife often says to me, I wouldn't be able to do this. I'm no good at math. It's a constant thing. But again, as chronic conditions go, I'd choose this over many, many, many others I could name.
There you go. He also noted that you talked about the fear, that's something that a lot of people don't want to admit because, you're given the tools to manage it and you don't want to, feel that fear, that knowledge that you got to do it for the rest of your life. But this idea of being more public about it, I've looked around and I've looked in all these online chat places and all these people are talking and saying things like, Jesus, has anybody ever felt cranky or does anyone know about mood swings? Do you think people are told about this, in the
it's
diabetic
a great
community?
Question.
Yeah.
I don't know. And I don't spend a lot of time on websites or right. reading books about this. So I don't know how widely known it is. And everybody at some point is newly diagnosed. So they're learning it and they're at that end of the learning curve. But yeah, I know when I got it, when I was diagnosed, my endocrinologist, to be frank, did a terrible job of letting me know what this might mean and how to really manage this. And, that was some years ago, but I'm sure there are still doctors who do a terrible job of letting people know how to deal with it.
On the other hand, the people that I know with type 1 diabetes, and I can now add you to that list, are some of the most achieving, successful people I know. And so I don't know if it's just keeping ahead of that thing chasing you. I don't know.
Well, it's interesting. I did well in school and was having a perfectly good career before I was diagnosed. But it does do this thing. It requires a certain discipline and focus. For me, it marked a certain kind of end of youth where I could just galump through life thinking, everything will be okay. It really does, in my case anyway, required me to focus on all of the things, exercise, diet, blah, blah, blah. And I certainly gave this to my character in True Believers, you can live a full and happy and fulfilling life. But it is this thing that kind of connects you to your mortality when you're 33 years old in a way that is sobering and chastening.
Yeah. Kurt Anderson, author of True Believers and also host of Public Radio Studio 360, talking to us from WNYC in New York. Kurt, thanks so much.
My pleasure, Robin.
Okay, here's another story. My friend is stopped by police. A computer glitch says there's a warrant on him. There's not, but he's taken to jail. The police won't let him take his insulin kit. He tries to tell them he needs it. He's a diabetic. But the policeman keeps offering him a sandwich, which he can't eat without his insulin. Do you have stories about living with type 1 diabetes, about the lack of awareness of what that means? Let us know. Go to hereandnow.org. Love to hear from you. Here and Now.